Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Just like that, second hour is here. Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow here on the Outkick Network. Outkick.com/watch and post show always on YouTube and podcast and much more. Chad?
We got some different podcast selections for you also.
Yes, we do.
Not just the podcast of the show. You get the full show if you want, but there's some excerpts taken out. We got some bonus pop culture podcast happening. We got a whole network going on with podcasts right now and audio. So Colin's doing a terrific job with that. Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast, you can check out Outkick Hot Mike.
Check out a conversation. See how pissed off Tim Brando is today. Based on his last visit with us.
Timmy B is wearing? Wow, I didn't expect him to be rocking Rock Chalk Jayhawk today.
What's up,
on
Tim?
The show.
I figure Kansas, after last year, that's my early pick for number one next year. How about that? I'm going to give Bill Self some love. How about that?
No doubt. It's hard not to just go with UConn again. How about
– Oh, that's true. No question about it. But I get asked this all the time. It's a little bit like watching the old Cosby show. I wear swag when I'm home. Yeah. And sometimes people, if I just run to the grocery store, somebody will say, what are you doing with that Wisconsin sweatshirt on? I'm like, it's swag.
Yeah. you get handed stuff, you'll wear it. No, I get it. Yeah. It's funny we're talking about Kansas and Bill Self, Tim, because we just had a discussion on best current coach in college basketball. Definitely tough to argue against Danny Hurley right now and UConn and what he's done. But another guy who's won a couple national titles is Bill Self. Yep. That's the other one that came to mind for us when we're talking about the best currently. But what Hurley has done is beyond impressive.
Oh, my God. Absolutely. And, you know, I actually loved what he said last night about, you know, we've been running college basketball for going on 30 years. You know, he has won 20% of the national championships since 99. Now think about that. Six national titles since 99 by three coaches. Okay. You had obviously Calhoun, who really got it all started. Don Perno did a nice job years ago, but it was Calhoun when he came over from Northeastern after he'd had some success there. I actually did a couple of his games when he was coaching at Northeastern. And then he got to UConn and jumped on it. And surprised a lot of people. Tate George and a few guys made a run to the Sweet 16, got knocked out by Duke on a buzzer beater by Leitner in that same year when, you know, they were going to do what they did to Kentucky. Now, he was close a lot before he actually won it in 99. And he beat Duke, of course. And that was one of Duke's better teams with Elton Brand and all them in Tampa. Now, you fast forward through these last few years, they went through the Kevin Ollie period. Then they had that dark period when they were, because of football over in the American Conference, Kevin Ollie wins a national championship. And here's Danny doing this makeover. And I don't know that Calhoun has ever gotten the credit, the plaudits that he deserves. And I thought that was Danny reaching out. That was early reaching out and recognizing, you know, what Jim Calhoun had done before, because that's a smart thing to do. Because, you know, if you think about Jay Wright, he brought Rolly Massimino back into the fold when Rolly had been, you know, at odds with some of their administration and with a lot of people in the press in Philadelphia. And Dan was doing the same thing. And you can make a great case. I mean, they are now a blue blood. And you know, you start talking about six national titles. You've got two as a head coach. And in all, you're talking about going back to Kimba and just a handful of years that season in 2011, that's multiple national titles are hard to come by. Very few teams have them. You know, the national championships and even Final Four appearances are hard to come by. Think about Tennessee, never has been there. Alabama just got there for the very first time as a program. So I liked the boldness with which he made that statement last night. It observed history, and I really love that. Any coach modern day coach that understands the history, those that came before him. That's a beautiful thing.
Tim Brando with us here on Hot Mic with Hunt and Withrow, outkick.com/watch. So the perspective of the back-to-back in this era that we're in for college athletics, easier, more difficult? I'd lean more difficult just based on the portal. Or easier on the reload if you're looking to just run it back with who you lost on the roster. But parity we were talking about, Tim, last year, we saw the top-heavy the teams that were really good throughout the season were really good in the tournament. And right. UConn was right there at the end with the second best team, undisputed, with Purdue.
Yeah. And again, I thought it was wise of him to say that they were clearly the second best team in the country. They had been all year. They had separated themselves earlier. And we said when the brackets came out, they got the toughest region, but it probably didn't matter. And guess what? It didn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, they blew Illinois out with a 30-0 run. That was an Illinois team that I thought, you know, potentially had the kind of weaponry to play with them, you know, with Hawkins and with Terrence Shannon back. Brad Underwood's team just got handled in that game. And I thought that would be much closer. Alabama, I did feel like, gave them the best game. And that's because Alabama's style of play was conducive to score with UConn longer than Purdue. You know, but again, we go back to the middle eight, fellas. How many times do we see this happen this year? Close game, close game, close game. Get to the under eight timeout, slight move. The last four of the first half, first four of the second half, the middle eight. It's true in college football. It's true in college basketball. Purdue had cut it to 32-30, but UConn gets the last two buckets in the first half to make it 36-30. Had a chance to get a three to make it 39-30 before the half. And what do they do? Bam, bam, bam. They hit their first two shots. And other than that slam that Heidi got on the follow for Purdue, that was the lone highlight for them in the second half. The game was over, flat out over, after the first television timeout in the second half in terms of who controlled the game. At no point did I feel like Purdue could get over the hump because they couldn't get stops. And if you can't get stops, forget about it. You know, Tristan Newton and Cam Spencer and all of that talent that surrounds that team. You have multiple guys, all five starters in double figures. You just, you know, that's too much. Most teams are fortunate if they have three out pitches offensively. Connecticut's got five, and then they can come back with three or four more off the bench.
Let's talk Blue Bloods for a minute. So Connecticut and now North Carolina tied with six national titles apiece. Ahead of them, only UCLA with 11 and Kentucky with 8. If 15, 20, 30 years ago, we said, hey, Kentucky job is open. They're going to offer the Alabama head coach. It would feel like a no-brainer that the Alabama head coach would leave for Kentucky. That's no longer the case because coaches are making their own Kentuckys wherever they are. Program they want, in their own image. They're getting paid a ton of money to do it, and they have a lot of NIL resources. So, Tim, what is Kentucky right now? And what is their level of where they can go hire their next coach?
Oh, they'll get whatever, you know, they'll do well. They'll get a high-end coach. Now, do they get the aspirational hire? Do they get Billy Donovan? I don't think so. And as much as I'd love to see Billy come back to the college game, you know, he's in a bit of a pickle in the NBA. He's in that position where you're not good enough, you know, to get lottery picks. You're not, you know, put it this way, you're not good enough to get great teams, but you're too good to get great picks. So, you know, they're going to have this play-in game with the Hawks. That's kind of where Lenny Wilkins was back in the 90s. You know, couldn't get past the second round. You know, you can win 50-plus games, but you can never win it. I don't think Billy wants to go through what college coaches now have to go through after those years in the NBA. I used to talk to PJ Carlissimo about this because I desperately wanted PJ to come back all those years, especially after he had the incident with Latrell Sprewell out of Golden State. And he's like, Timmy, I just, you know, the lifestyle is a good one and it's basketball only. And even if you get fired, you know, you get recycled, you know, usually in the NBA, you know, you just do.
Yeah.
So I don't see him coming. I don't. A lot of people have talked about Scott Drew because of the buyout. I think he loves Baylor. I think he loves the lifestyle that Baylor offers. just because he's got a $4 million buyout and somebody else has a $20 million buyout, I don't see that as a reason for him to go.
I think he loves being at a Christian school also.
He does. He absolutely does. Yeah, his faith base has something to do with his love and affinity for Waco. No question about that. Pearl actually makes the most sense. Bruce is the closest thing to Cal out there. And I would go so far as to say that his offensive structure and the way he coaches is a lot more modern day than Calipari's. But his persona is very similar to Cal's, meaning he can handle, okay, all that comes with the Kentucky operation. You know, he's suited for it. You know, he will press the flesh in more ways than one. So, you know, there's a part of him that still misses Tennessee. Even though Auburn's great, there's a part of him that misses Tennessee because it didn't end the way he wanted it to end. If he did go back to Kentucky, that would change a few minds of people in Tennessee that still revere him as a guy that got that program, you know, going again. You know, and Tennessee had some success under Ray Mears, but never the championship kind of experience, not an Elite Eight that would jump out at you, and not those kinds of wins against Kentucky that would, even with Ernie and Bernie, they didn't have great moments in March. So Bruce kind of makes the most sense to me.
Tim, what does this mean for Arkansas?
Oof. Oh, they're going to love it. They're going to be calling the Hogs, and Cal will be calling them with him tomorrow. Guaranteed. He will be all in. He will bring a city slicker approach to Arkansas, and that's okay because the people that are bringing him in, those are money people that would hardly qualify as hillbillies in the Ozarks. Okay, we're talking the Red Hudson group, the Tyson group, the J.B. Hutt group, all those guys. I remember Nolan Richardson used to have a golf tournament when he was in his heyday and won the title in 94 and came in 95. And Red Hudson and Tyson, they all owned these huge homes. Some of them had basically condos in there, and they would use them for their corporate meetings. And in one of those condos one year, Tubby Smith, right when he took the Kentucky job, Roy Williams, who was at Carolina, Lon Kruger had just gone to the Final Four. So this was the 94 year. Lon Kruger was at Florida. He came and played. So it was Roy, Lon, and who was the other one? Kelvin. It was Kelvin Sampson, who was at Oklahoma at the time. We're all suite mates, and we're right off the first tee at what is now known as the Pinnacle. It used to be, it used to have a different name there. They had to get rid of it, but they play an LPGA event there in Rogers, Arkansas. And I remember Nolan Richardson saying to me, he said, "Tim, if there were a bomb dropped," he said, "if there were a bomb dropped in the Rogers, Arkansas area, the gross national product of Arkansas would just sink because this is where all the money is. I mean, it's where all the money is." And all those folks are the guys that are responsible for bringing Calipari in there. So, and they love their basketball. They want to get that choreography going and get Bud Walton Arena rocking the way it did when Nolan Richardson was there. And most of them had some moments, but they were too infrequent. You know, they want to be there. They want to be Kentucky and be better at being Kentucky than Kentucky. So who better for them to get than Calipari, who really will be preaching something to them that they haven't heard. The people in the Commonwealth will be saying, "Well, we've heard that before." But to Arkansans, it won't matter. They just want to root for the Hogs, and this is a guy that they can believe in. And at this stage of John Calipari's career, he's not going to change too much, but he does need a different audience to preach to. And this audience will be, as they say, filling in all the pews. The congregation will be there, okay? And the contributions will be great.
Yeah, they're there to tithe.
They are.
I like the Pinnacle more than I do Champions Golf and Country Club, which is what the...
was it. Yes, thank you.
Yes.
That was it. A lot of elevated tees, and it was great because I was the only non-coach that was part of this event. He had me sort of MC it. Nolan would have me MC it. And I would do impressions of coaches, which I'm prone to do.
Yeah.
And they got a kick out of it. So for about 5 or 6 years, I went to that thing every May, and we had a blast. We really did.
Hey, we're talking golf. It just reminds me, you were a part of the CBS coverage of the Masters.
I was.
And I'd love the perspective of the behind-the-scenes aspect for the broadcaster. Access. Chad, whenever Chad and I are there, we're waiting in line at the Hooters. You know, that's pretty much the only place to go, right? If you want some food.
To shake John Daly's hand.
Yes.
I was
going
to say, you're going to run down to John Daly's shop.
To shake John Daly's buffalo sauce covered hand.
Yes. We're trying to sneak in the side door so we'd have to wait in line, and it actually does work.
He started doing that right around the Bubba Watson run.
Okay.
And that's when I was working Masters.com digitally. I was working with so many of the really wonderful guys that are part of their team now. Some of the guys that work at the Golf Channel now, Grant Boone is part of that. And so many others. We had a blast. And just so you know, there are no hotels in Augusta.
Oh, yes, we know.
So we were, CBS would go in, and I'm sure now ESPN does this too. There is a, gated golf community or several gated golf communities, and their prime hosts basically give up their homes for about a 2-week period, and the corporation, CBS and other corporations, probably ESPN too, I would imagine, they rent out these homes just as if a Hollywood motion picture production is coming into your town and they want to shoot.
Yeah.
They want to put the stars like Kevin Costner and whoever else is coming to shoot the movie there in your home. Now you're going to get probably, maybe $15,000 a month for leasing it to the company. And you put three guys in a 3-bedroom home. And so you live there basically for the week, a little more than a week. And you get the key, the gate to the gate to keeper that allows you in. So if we didn't get into homes to stay there, we wouldn't be able, we'd be in pup tents probably somewhere not far away because there just aren't enough hotel rooms in that area. And so that's the way it's been done for so many years. I got to do it for 3 years and I loved it. And I'll be honest with you, fellas, I miss getting to do the Masters more than I do the NCAA tournament. And people never saw me on CBS. They only saw me digitally. But I had so much fun getting to do that. And Scott McCarron was my analyst.
Okay.
And we did feature groups. And Scotty Mack and I had a wonderful time. We really did. And now he's printing money on the Champions Tour, as you know. That's what he's doing these days.
Tim, what a time it is for women's basketball when you look at the ratings. Over 18 million people watched the national championship game between Iowa and South Carolina. That's more than 4 million more than watched the men's national championship game. But I think a lot of people in media have twisted that to say, well, there must be something wrong with the men's game if the women's game is having these ratings right now. And I don't see it that way. When you see the two teams that played for the national championship, I just think it's a terrific moment we're having in the women's game right now. And it's not necessarily a bad statement about the men's game. Where do you fall on this?
Oh, absolutely. We should be able to enjoy both. It shouldn't be an either or. But we understand why the far left of media is doing this, don't we? I mean, we do. The far left of sports media doesn't like the college game because there aren't enough shot creators. I'd rather see the ball move than the ball being dribbled on a straight line for a kick out for three. And
yes.
I would rather see Zach Edey with a couple of players, on each arm as he's trying to go up to get an and one than see any stretch five that could be playing for any NBA team that we see out there. They want the writers want the game to be played like the NBA. And I loathe the NBA. I can't stand watching the NBA. And frankly, it makes me sad to say that, because I loved it, and I think I learned a lot of basketball in the mid-90s when I was calling it for Turner. It's a shame. But those days, the way the game was played, when Shaquille O'Neal was in the post, or when you went to the other teams and you saw other bigs that like Hakeem Olajuwon, the way they played, I loved being a part of the National Basketball Association as a broadcaster back then. Now, you could take the two teams, with maybe the exception of Doncic and a few others, you know, I wouldn't be able to tell if the teams changed clothing at halftime when they came back out, because they all play the same game and they don't defend and officials don't call fouls at all. So I want to see a game closer to the level of effort that I see in the college game. And if the iron is a bit unkind, fine. Usually that's a part of, if you can only get up, I felt like Purdue had to get 14 threes to have a chance at winning that game last night. They only got off 7.
Yep.
I'd say Connecticut got them off the 3-point line, wouldn't you? Do you see players get other players in the NBA off the 3-point line? Never. You never see them get them off the 3-point line because they don't defend. Now, as for the women's game, Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese and those great players at LSU, South Carolina, and Iowa in particular, and there are other stars coming up. Now, they're going to take a bit of a hit when Caitlin leaves. I think Caitlin's going to take a hit, both financially when she goes. She'll get a lot more endorsements than most, so that'll probably pick up for the losses that she has in NIL money, because the WNBA maximum, as you know, is $75K. So, you know, she won't get hurt financially, but other players that go there do. NIL money is wonderful for the women, and it's doing fantastic for them. But there are other players coming up. Madeline Booker, who plays for Coach Schaefer at Texas. That's a young lady. It's only 18, coming off her freshman year. She almost made it to the Final Four this year. So there are other great women's players coming up. But guys, I'm just going to tell you this right now, okay? And I tweeted this, put it on X just yesterday. If they don't do something, okay, about the issue revolving around biological men being allowed to play in women's sports in the NCAA, if they don't do something similar to what the NAIA just announced they were doing, we haven't had it in team sports yet. It's only happened in individual sports like swimming. And I applaud Riley Gaines, who I know is without kick, for what she's doing. But the NAIA took a significant step that impacted over 80,000 kids that participate in all sports at that level. And if we have a biological man that's coming in to go in the low post and grind on and be a bump and grind player over a biological female, it will be to the ruin of the women's game, which is so sad to say or even imagine, given how far they've come.
Don Staley's totally fine with that, though.
You know, fellas, I'm going to give her a bit of a mulligan on that. And by the way, much applause to your guy. I'm trying to remember his
Dan.
Name. It starts with a Z.
Dan
Zakrzewski. Yeah.
Don Zakrzewski. I'm glad he asked the question. Very glad he asked the question. Yeah. But did you notice her pause?
Yes.
There was a very distinct pause.
And he asked the follow-up to clarify, and she said yes.
That's when she doubled down and made her mistake. At first, I just think she was ill-prepared, which that's on the publicist at South Carolina. You got to get your coaches ready for what's to come. And on that stage, whether it's Dan or somebody else, somebody's going to be asking that question. Okay?
Yes.
There's Clay Travis in the back. Hello?
Yeah.
You know, somebody's going to ask that question at some point.
Someone should have prepped Tebow.
The media. Yeah, exactly. That's how he made his name at the SEC Media Days. No question about it. I remember that well. Listen, for her not to be prepared is one thing. But when the follow-up comes, now you got to be honest. Now you just have to be brutally honest. And I thought it was a great example of just how scared, how really scared all the prominent women in all levels of team sports are when it comes to this. Only Martina Navratilova that I know of. And sadly, 20 years ago, what she had to say would carry a lot more weight than it does now. She's still the greatest individual female performer I ever covered when I did tennis at ESPN back in the day. And I did get to cover her in matches, including in the warm-up to Wimbledon back in 1990, at the height of her story personally, which was dominating the tabloids at that time with Judy Nelson. She was also fantastic when she answered the question about this earlier, but no one else will. No one else will go there, and it's really sad. But maybe when she has more time to think about it and understands that what she said could be something she has to deal with again further down the road, and I believe it will happen in team sports soon, you know, Cardoza's a tremendous talent. She's got one of the best inside players that the women's basketball has ever had. I mean, she is a beast in there. But imagine if she were going up against what would be considered a player remotely similar that is a biological male. Think about that.
Right.
And after she's given that some thought, I think she'll realize the error of her judgment on that follow-up question. Because I've known Dawn long enough to know that she knows better. So, you know, hopefully it'll come up again. But that just proves the power of that side of today's media forces. You know, I get it all the time. Somebody will come back at me and say, you know, you're just trying to hang on, you know, you old baby boomer. You're hardly relevant any longer. You know, Tim, get off my lawn, Brando. I hear that all the time. And I'm like, no, I'm not as far right as you're trying to paint me into being. Like, I had this conversation, I thought, when we were last together, when Jeff Landry, the governor of Louisiana, went off on Kim Mulkey and said that, you know, you need to get your players out there or maybe take away Scott. That's nuts. He shouldn't have said that.
Deep end.
And that's a Republican governor that I voted for. So he can go too far to the right as well. But the bottom line is what Dawn Staley said was wrong. And she had time to think about it on that follow-up question. So hopefully she'll make good on it the next time around. I like her. I think she's done a great job at South Carolina, has elevated the game, and I'm going to give her a mulligan this time.
And the season that the women's college basketball just had. I mean, it's not be able to answer. You have Pat McAfee who can go after his boss, Norby Williamson.
And get him fired.
Not worry one bit, but we can't say there are two genders, male and female, without being edited on YouTube.
I mean, think about that for just a second. I mean, that is absolutely crazy. One other thing about the men's tournament and the women's tournament.
Yeah.
When you hear the term, and Michael Mulvihill Hill is a really smart guy. He's our numbers guy.
Yes. He was on with us recently.
Yeah, he was on with us last week.
Dissects the metrics. Yeah, dissects the metrics well. When you hear the term linear TV, linear means any network that's live, okay, like you're streaming.
Yes.
This is streaming television. We're watching you on a computer and you're streaming. This is online. But Turner Broadcasting, TBS, is linear, as is ESPN, even though you pay for it, and it is cable, all right? FS1, that is linear, just as linear as Big Fox would be. But there is a difference, okay, in CBS and TBS when you're taking a look at the ratings, all right? And the thing that you have to remember is, in the rural areas of this country, all right, cable was never wired in those areas. So those people in the hinterlands that want to watch a live sporting event, they need it to be on network TV, not on cable. So when you say cable versus broadcast, there's a delineation there, but they are both linear. But I raise that point because when you look at ABC, even at the time of day that game was on, versus TBS, those are two different audience sizes. So congratulations to the women. I get the fact that the rating was higher, but the measurements on those ratings are different. They are. And I'll leave it there.
Tim Brando, always our favorite guest. Timmy B, great chatting with you yet again. Thank you.
Thanks, fellas. Always good to be with
Thanks,
you.
Tim.
And enjoy Augusta National.
Yes.
Rory wins. I've got Rory McDaniel.
There we go.
Rory McDaniel. Rory McIlroy.
I'll bet on both of them to win. Rory McDaniel and Rory McIlroy.
Rory McDaniel's the amateur.
I'm going to put money down on both those guys to win. I don't know who Rory McDaniel is, but I hear he has got a great short game, and I'm going to bet on him.
That's his new caddy. Yeah. Rory McDaniel.
I'm going Rory McDaniel for low amateur.
You're the man, Tim.
Oh, God.
Good to see you.
We'll see you. All right.
Timmy B.
When he says the hinterlands, I immediately think about that old man who came down the mountain to buy your truck.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the day. And I'm thinking, that guy couldn't even watch the national championship game on TBS.
The man had a lot of cash.
Because it wasn't on CBS. Wherever that guy is, he couldn't watch the game.
Coming up, Bob Herrick joins us. New book, Drive. And it is chronicling Tiger Woods in the 15th major, 2019 at the Masters. That's next here on Hot Mic. Sixth and Peabody location, Yeehaw Beer, Old Smoky Moonshine. Glad you're with us. Hot Mike with Hunt and Withrow here at OutKick.com. Masters Week, it never gets old, Chad. You will be you'll be landscaping by the weekend, won't you?
I will be mowing and landscaping this weekend, Hutton. I'll be coaching softball, and my family will be at a wedding shower on Sunday afternoon. So I have the house to myself.
There you go.
So I may come join you.
Let's go.
We'll watch the Masters together Sunday round. I actually get 4 hours to myself to watch the Masters. I cannot wait.
Yeah, same. Always enjoy discussing Tiger Woods and the legacy that is the GOAT and just what he's done for the game of golf. And I love the fact that he continues to play in the Masters. Bob Herrig certainly knows the story of Tiger Woods. He's been there from the very beginning covering him with ESPN and now Sports Illustrated and now the new book, Drive, The Lasting Legacy of Tiger Woods, available now. Bob joins us. Bob, thank you for the time, man. Really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
So I'm jealous of Chad because he was at the 2019 Masters when Tiger won. You certainly were. In the moment, are you already thinking about this book?
You know, afterward, I certainly was because I think there's an argument to be made. It's actually would be a fun debate that's his greatest win. Because Tiger was not the same Tiger. You know, his last major had been 11 years prior. And when he won that one in 2008, his 14th at Torrey Pines, you know, he was at the top of the game. You know, Tiger, his amazing year actually playing with a bad knee. He won five times that year, including the U.S. Open, and then he had knee surgery. He was out for almost 9 months and came back and won six times the next year. But in 2019, he's 43, and you know he had been diminished. His back had given him so many problems. Big surgery that was, you know, very dicey as far as whether he'd play golf again. And he's competing against guys 10 to 15 years younger than him. So to get it done in under those circumstances, I thought was, you know, you can certainly say that his 15 shot win at U.S. Open in 2000 was maybe his greatest, and winning by 12 here at Augusta the first time, or a 2008 U.S. Open. There's others that we can debate, but I just think that 2019 tops them all.
Yeah, and I think it's hard for people to even remember what it was like with the back surgeries, with all the issues, and then golf fans or sports fans just wanting Tiger to, can I see one more moment of greatness? Are we going to get one more sliver of greatness or even in contention on the Sunday of a major? And then that whole weekend building to that moment, it was magical. And then it happened, right? And then, oh, well, now maybe he'll go do it again. Things have happened since then also. But if you can, Bob, take us back to that period of time where it wasn't just doubts. I don't think anyone truly believed it was going to happen again for Tiger Woods, given all the difficulties.
Well, if you go back to the time, to this day, frankly, in 2017, the day of the Champions Dinner, Tuesday night, Tiger showed up. He hadn't played since Dubai that year. He withdrew after the first round. He'd gone all the way to Dubai and looked awful. He shot 77, didn't make a birdie, came off the course after the first round, tried to say that his back wasn't bothering him. He looked crazily bad. And then he didn't, he withdrew the next day. And he never showed up at Genesis. He didn't show up at the Arnold Palmer, the Players. He did not play. And there was thought he might try to play the Masters. Well, he shows up at the Champions Dinner and he could barely walk. And he has described since then that he basically needed pain meds to get through the night. He was on a nerve block. He told past champions at the dinner that he thought his career might be over. But the odyssey sort of continued from there. He had these plans to go to the UK overnight from Augusta, flew overnight, met with these doctors, consultants, sort of to carve out a plan of action for him. Like, how is he going to have a quality of life? It wasn't so much about golf. It was, how is he going to play with his kids? You know, how is he going to get around? He was 41 at the time. Not like he's old. You know, he's got a whole life to live. And that's when they recommended this surgeon. They gave him options, but one of them was this surgeon in Dallas named Dr. Richard Geyer. he'd been doing this type of surgery for years, a spinal fusion. He has a back institute there. And that's what he ended up doing. Of course, we didn't know this. You know, we wake up one day and we're told, hey, the Tigers had spinal fusion surgery. Like, everybody's had to scramble to look up what it was, you know, and but it meant six months, he's not going to be able to do anything. He couldn't swing a golf club. So that takes him into late 2017. He comes back in 2018 and actually contended in his first, in his fourth tournament, finished second at the Valspar, won a tournament later that year. But still, with all that, does that mean you're going to win the Masters? He had a great 2018. The comeback that year was impressive in its own right. But there was no guarantee he was going to win the Masters. He contended in 2 and 18 and didn't get it done and shows up here. And, you know, he's got to beat Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson, Xander Schauffele, Tony Finau was in his group. Francisco Molinari played with Tiger in the final round in the Masters. Well, the year before at the Open at Carnoustie, it was Molinari who won. Tiger briefly led, and Molinari overtook him over the last six holes. So these guys at this time, while they respected Tiger greatly, they certainly didn't fear him anymore. And, you know, he got it done against that backdrop with all the stuff he had been through with his back and the rehab that he had to go through. And then plus just the daily grind of getting ready. You know, I don't think any of us really knows what it's like for Tiger after a round of golf nowadays to sort of recover and ramp back up for the next day.
Bob Herrig with us, where you can check out Drive, the new book available right now, chronicling Tiger Woods. One thing I'm going to try to go deeper on this later in the week, Bob, but the idea, the mentality of the greatest athletes of our generation or any generation, and knowing the expectation of greatness for them. And I'm trying to appreciate what Tiger's doing, giving us still these moments, knowing that he set the record for the most consecutive rounds without missing the cut, or tournaments without missing the cut, and the dominance factor. And then knowing he's struggling based on the weather or other factors, just getting around the course and not necessarily looking like Tiger Woods and certainly not feeling the way he used to, given his expectation in his own right. Is it surprising that he's still playing and still putting himself in the spotlight the way he is?
In some ways it is, because he doesn't really need to.
Right.
You know, obviously he doesn't need the money. He's not doing it because he feels his career is unfulfilled. He's done just about everything. You know, his career is going to stack up with the greatest of all time. I mean, it's a pretty good argument to compare him to Jack Nicklaus. There's pros and cons on each side. I just think he likes to compete. I think his son might have something to do with this. His son, Charlie, who plays golf, I think he wants to give him an example of you know, look, if you want to play golf at a high level, you got to work at it. And I'm having a hard time playing at a high level, but I'm still trying to work at it. There could be some of that in play. And he's obviously got immense pride. He talked about it today, you know, during his news conference. He loves golf. He's a competitor. He wants to still win. He still thinks he can beat these guys. And, you know, I think that part of it is people at this highest level of sport, you know, their minds work differently than ours. You know, they're wired differently. They have an extra gear that allows them to push through when, you know, the rest of us sort of via human nature just sort of doubt. And he's able to persevere through that.
What do you think the coverage will be like for Charlie Woods compared to Tiger Woods?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a little bit risky territory right now. I mean, he's already gotten some coverage.
Oh, yeah. And Tiger's putting him out there, playing, you know, with these tournaments and things.
Have you cut a book deal with him yet for your next book?
Maybe after Charlie gets an NIL deal somewhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
I think it's, you know, it's almost a little uncomfortable, because if you think back, read back, Tiger at the age Charlie is now was semi-famous.
Yeah.
Like, he had already done a lot. He'd won a ton of tournaments as a kid. He was in high school. He was number one on his high school team as a freshman. He was already being recruited to colleges. during that timeline, he started winning U.S. Juniors and then the U.S. Amateur. You know, he was playing a lot of competitive golf. Charlie is a very, very good player, but he's not at the tops of his age group in Florida. And that's no knock, but I mean, it's, you know, he's got some growing to do. How much is his swing going to change? How much does he love it? How much does he want to do it? I think it'll be more of a question if Charlie goes and plays college golf. You know, like as he goes through high school, is he recruited? Is he a top type player that big college programs are going to want to have? And then I think we start to ask these questions a little bit more. He'll get covered though. I mean, he tried to qualify for the Cognizant Classic, which is used to be called the Honda Classic, and it was a pre-qualifier. And he was probably a little out of his depth. It meant that this was a qualifier to get in a qualifier to try to get one of four spots in the field. And I was surprised Tiger let him do it. I was surprised they went to that. And sure enough, you know, a bunch of people showed up. There was media there. He didn't play great. He didn't break 80. And, you know, but maybe it was good for him. You know, like it's probably like an example of how hard it is and how much improvement he needs to make.
Final thing on the way out, Bob, who do you like this week? We're going to play this here in Nashville on our app.
Well, I mean, look, this is the easy way out right now. I think Scottie Scheffler, he's getting the kind of odds that Tiger used to get. Like the kind of odds that you say, why would I even bother, especially in a golf tournament, like 4 or 5 to 1. It's crazy. I mean, you're going to pick one guy at those odds and you've got a whole field of golfers, you know, but yet Tiger, people used to pick Tiger against the field. Scheffler's won twice in the last month. He's been the most consistent player over the past year. He won the Masters 2 years ago. There's a lot pointing in his direction, but you know, I don't necessarily think that's going to happen. You know, golf is a weird game that way. I wouldn't be surprised if the defending champion Jon Rahm were up there again. Brooks Koepka didn't have a great tournament his last event last weekend in Miami, but I still think that, you know, he shows up at these majors. And you know, maybe a couple of other guys we haven't been hearing from much this year. Victor Hovland is a guy I like. Played great in the majors the last few years. Hasn't done much this year, but did win the FedEx Cup on the PGA Tour last year. So he had a great, like, full season last year, won late in the year twice. Great Ryder Cup for Europe. So there's a couple of names, but good luck figuring it out. You know, we got some bad weather possibly, so it's going to be a little bit disruptive. We don't know who's going to play on what side. So it's going to be interesting for sure.
And that will factor into Tiger getting around the course too, which we'll certainly be watching. Bob Herrig's been our guest. Drive, the lasting legacy of Tiger Woods, available now at bookstores near you, and you can also check it out online, of course. Bob, thank you for the perspective here, and we look forward to this.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Yep, absolutely.
Thanks, Bob.
Enjoy the Masters. Enjoy the tradition, unlike any other.
We will all be enjoying the Masters this weekend.
Especially Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Stay tuned. We wrap up the show and hit the latest headlines. Where's Calipari in Arkansas, by the way? Do we have no confirmation of this?
No, no official news.
I'm going to put a call in during the break.
Tyson Chicken has to confirm.
Here on Hot Mic. Hot Mic with Hunter Withrow here at outkick.com/watch. Chad, Arkansas has scheduled a Board of Trustees meeting at 9 a.m.
Okay,
Wednesday.
Okay, good.
It's expected that Calipari's contract will be approved at that time.
Tomorrow morning?
Here's a hint. It's already been approved. It's already been approved.
Well, everybody on that board has already been in the loop on everything, and they've approved everything that's happened so far. This is happening tomorrow morning?
It says Wednesday at 9 a.m. Report from Fayetteville about 15 minutes ago.
My guess is Thursday by 2 p.m., John Calipari will have called the Hogs at a press conference.
He's calling them now, probably.
That's part of the phone call.
My
tentative Woo Pig Suey from Calipari will be around 3 p.m. Eastern time on Thursday. That's my timetable.
Call those Hogs. The bank teller that had a lawsuit against Chiefsaholic, Xavier Badubar.
Old Xavier.
Xavier. Or is it Xavier? Chiefs, it's both, according to the attorney, which we'll hear from in just a moment. Of course, the attorney, Matthew Merriman, said, hey, when the truth comes out, this guy who is, you know, accused of robbing banks, he didn't do it. The truth is going to set him free. Then, of course, he sets himself free with that ankle bracelet. Goes on everyone went on a manhunt for him. They find Chief Zaholic, and Matthew Merriman doubles down again, but also is trying to explain why. Well, they were able to plead guilty. Here is his attorney after the $10.8 million verdict against Chief Zaholic. This is his attorney back in February.
From the beginning of this case, folks, the government has been blitzing, and Xavier's pocket was collapsing. But today, Xavier stepped into the pressure. He took responsibility for his actions.
Sure.
He stood up in court, humble and repentant, and admitted what he had done. Now, if I know anything about Xavier, and if
Xavier,
the Chiefs Kingdom knows anything about
Xavier.
Chief Zaholic, we know that he doesn't give up.
He does know that he doesn't play football, right?
He stumbled and he fell. He didn't let his knee touch the ground.
He ran.
And that's because he's capable of doing a great thing.
Stealing.
And he knows that there's still hope.
Theft.
We still have a lot of work to do on his case, but Xavier wants everyone to know that he loves the Chiefs Kingdom, he loves Kansas City, and he hopes that you'll rally to his support. Thank you, and God bless.
God bless you, Matthew Merriman.
Amazing, Xavier. Amazing clip every time I see it. It never gets old.
Well, that was the day that Xavier pleaded guilty. Here is Matthew Merriman back in August of the previous year.
This is not Chief Zaholic's last drive.
He looks like McLovin.
And he believes,
right?
Yes. And we believe, that when the final whistle blows,
is it McLovin?
And all of the facts are known, that he is going to be redeemed in the eyes of his community,
his Lord,
in the eyes of his
Redeemer.
Fans,
Savior.
And in the eyes of the Chiefs Kingdom.
In the eyes of the Chiefs Kingdom.
He will be redeemed in the eyes of his Lord and Savior, Andy Reid.
As if they care. You know what they're going to do, Matthew Merriman, in the eyes of the Chiefs Kingdom? They're going to go find someone else that will wear a wolf outfit, and they'll put them in it, and that will be the new Chief Zaholic.
I want this guy to defend Morgan Wallen in court.
Throwing chairs.
I want to hear about all the musical references.
Or is it Morgan?
And analogies
Morgan
he can make about him throwing a chair off a building. We'll talk more about this. We didn't get to our betas today. We can talk more about this story tomorrow. It is not cancel culture when you're arrested for a felony. We're using the term cancel culture
right.
A little too freely. When we're asking the question about will he evade cancel culture, the dude could have murdered someone with a chair off of seven stories, throwing into a street in downtown Nashville at 10:30 at night. Like, that's a problem. This dude should go to jail for that for about 2 or 3 months to learn a lesson. Like, there's a difference. Cancel culture is when you say a stupid word and lefty media tries to cancel you.
Right.
Throwing a chair off a balcony and possibly killing someone is a felony. And this was Morgan Wallen's face after committing said felonies, multiple felonies, when he did this. So
throwing a chair off a
rooftop. I like Morgan Wallen's music and his songwriting abilities like the next guy, but this is not a case of cancel culture. This man was arrested for a felony, and rightfully so.
Yes. Throwing the chair.
I mean, we've walked on Broadway in Nashville.
It was Eric Church's new bar.
Yes.
Chief, which is nice, by the way.
He's very lucky, and everyone's very lucky, that didn't hit
sure.
someone walking on Broadway.
Yeah. He would have been canceled for that, and that would have been the big sword.
Yeah, by canceled, he would have been imprisoned.
Yeah, what I'm saying. Like, he would have been canceled, quote unquote.
Imprisonment, you know, we're looking at the chart here. Imprisonment up here, cancel culture down here. Then occasionally you get Harvey Weinstein, where it's both happen, right? Like, we got that's where you got a real fight going on. Oh, prison or a cancel. How about both with that happening? Morgan Wallen, if he hit someone, he would have been both imprisoned and canceled after this.
Well, what
that
would
was
have happened
a bad
if
deal.
It's just the drunk, the guys on the bachelor party throwing a chair off a balcony?
Oh, they should be arrested
well,
and
that,
go to
they
jail.
They would have.
Yeah.
They'd still be there. Hot Mike, Honey Withrow, back at it, 4 p.m. Eastern.
$15,000 bail? Is that what it was? $15,000?
Yeah. Chiefs of Holic paid more.
You paid more for that great representation.
OutKick.com/watch.